are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me. Welcome to OMG, the Omara Gale Radio Show. I'm your host, Mara Gale. And you know what I like to do? I love to help people see things differently. I enjoy when a perspective is widened, when views are enlarged, because the more angles you have of a situation, the better the vantage point, so that you can make informed decisions. You see, I've been blessed with experience in all sorts of areas, and I believe in my heart and soul, we all live and learn in order to share and teach. I love serving Maravation. It's the perfect blend of motivation and inspiration. I believe some of the greatest people in the world are only one word of encouragement away from being and doing something meaningful. I think more people would get if they would get outside of themselves and their situations and just look up, call up, or speak up and into the lives of others, we would experience a more productive world around us. And so it is with great joy that I'm going to introduce to you to have a conversation that I believe is just about that, inspiring people to their greater selves, allowing people to focus on what's good and what's pure and what's right in their life, as well as take some of those crafty hobbies and those passions and parlay them into. My guest today, I call her twin, is Talia Stovall. She's an author, she's a speaker, she's a corporate trainer, but more importantly, she's my sister friend. So would you be so kind as to put your virtual hands together and give her a virtual hand clap? Welcome, welcome to the show.
Yay, thank you so much, twin. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited for you to be here. So Talia, there is so many areas that I want to chit-chat with you about and allow our audience to eavesdrop on, but I'd first like to ask you about Tea Grace. Just share a little bit of what Tea Grace is. I know that the T must stand for Talia. Is the T a middle initial for grace?
Yes, it is. Ah. You know, my creativity goes into my writing. When it comes to naming things, I was just like, okay, Tea Grace, that'll work. But people actually say they like it. So
I love it.
Thank you.
I love it. And so what is Tea Grace exactly?
Tea Grace is the umbrella under which I do all of my stuff that I'm passionate about. I do as a corporate trainer on a contract basis, but all of my coaching, my speaking, my writing, I even do some consulting for some small businesses, writing projects and things like that. And I do all of that under the umbrella of Tea Grace. So it's kind of while I'm doing the other things, I'm working my passion, while I'm using my gifts, the same gifts that I use in my passion, I use in my corporate training.
That
and I'm going to
awesome.
Talk a little bit more about gifts when we get into our conversation, too.
Ooh, I can't wait. And I understand you have an undergrad degree in business administration and a master's in business administration and marketing, right?
Yes, I do.
I think that is absolutely awesome. Has that been a big springboard for how you've been able to market yourself? And because you're an author of, you know, few books as well as ebooks, and you even have motivational audio products, is that a part of, is that how you've been able to use your marketing degree to get it out to the masses?
Yes and no. Okay. I always was interested in marketing, and it just kind of was one of those things that semi came naturally because I'm a natural networker and I love to use technology and just connect with people. And so it all kind of fit in together. And I don't know if I so much used the degree, but some of the skills that I gained out of it. I'm going to share more about my background and how I progressed through the different areas of education and work that I went through that some had absolutely nothing to do with my purpose in life. But sometimes we take a circuitous route through life, and it's okay.
We do. And you know, and that's actually, I'm sure a lot of our listeners today can totally relate to, you know, you went to high school and you focused on an area, then you went to college and you studied a particular major and you graduated in that. Watch that degree sit on the wall while you wondered what are you going to be doing, you know, and it had maybe nothing to do with what the degree was, but every experience, I'm sure, became a stepping stone for where it is you ended up down the road.
And that's exactly how it flowed, sis. And that's why the first thing I tell people when they want to understand the direction that they need to go, what their purpose is, their God-given calling and purpose in life, is to tap into that passion. Because what it is those things that showed up in me as a child are going to show up as an adult. The things that show up in you as a child, those giftings are with you when you're born, and they follow you through your life. Many people live their lives frustrated because they are doing something that's outside of their God-given calling and outside of the gifts that he naturally put inside of us. And so that's why I say we have to tap into our passion, first of all. My favorite quote is by Scottish theologian William Barclay. He said, there's two great days in a person's life, the day we're born and the day we understand why. And so many people are still struggling with that why. And so they live their lives frustrated. And I tell them sometimes, you know, I had this experience, and some of your listeners might have too, that Sunday night depression when it gets to be about 9 o'clock Sunday night, you get that pit in your stomach because you're thinking, oh, I got to go there tomorrow for the next 5 days. I got to go to this place I hate. And it's because there's no bad people. They're not bad employees. It's you're in the wrong job. You're doing the wrong thing. And so I try to help people understand we're all uniquely wired for purpose, and that wiring is in us from the time we're a child. So I tell people if they don't understand what their purpose is, think back on what it is you love to do as a child. Think back on what it is that the people around you tell you that you did well. So if you don't know yourself, ask the people close to you. They can tell you what you're good at. For me, it was always writing. When I was a little girl, I'd get mad at somebody in my family. I'd write them a letter detailing the heinous crimes they committed against me and why I wasn't going to be their friend anymore. And my brother called them hate notes because he got most of them. But by the time I was 14, I knew that I wanted to be an author. But you know how sometimes we just don't trust our natural gifts? When things come easy to us, we don't value it sometimes. So I was the one who could, you know, if I had a writing assignment due in English class, get it a week before, I'd write it in 6th period, turn it in 7th period, get an A. Yes. Whereas a friend of mine would struggle all week, turn it in and get a C. You know, but so I never really understood that that was a gift that God gave me to just be able to write like that. So when my counselor said, oh, you're good in math and science, you should be an engineer. That's a good field for women. I said, okay, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't think I could write and make a living. So I said, okay, I went to engineering school. I was a chemical engineering major for 3 years. Now, you know me chemical well enough to know that I don't have an engineering personality. So I hated it. So I changed to business. Like you mentioned, I got my undergrad in business. I went to grad school, got my MBA in marketing. I kind of like marketing. I kind of like business a little bit better. While I was in school, my mother kept saying, you should get a job at the bank. You should work at the bank. You should work at the bank. I'd always say, I don't want to work at the bank. You should get a job at the bank. I don't want to work at the bank. So when I got ready to graduate, I was looking for a job. I wanted to come back to Chicago. So I took the first job offer that was offered to me. Where do you think I ended up?
At the bank.
At the bank. Exactly.
For years, you ended up at the bank. For like 10, 12, no, 6, 16 years?
Yeah, 16 and a half years.
But you know what's interesting? Just so that you guys who are listening to this conversation know, Talia and I call each other twin. But this is what's so amazing. Did you know? No, you didn't. I actually studied accounting for 3 years.
See?
Because I wanted to be, I thought, a CPA. Now, you know a lot about me, and nothing about me reeks. Sit behind a desk. Counting change. So at one point, I couldn't find a penny in my combination jar for me. And so I went into radio and television. But this is the other thing. I got offered a job at a bank, but I had to stop playing basketball. I had to stop running track, and I had to resign from the pom-pom squad. And I wasn't doing that in my junior year. So, of course, I left that alone. But as I'm listening to you, I go, wow, I would have been working for you at a bank.
And well, I have to say that's where the similarity ends. I don't have a sporting body bone in my body. You got the athleticism in the family.
Was my weapon as well. It was my weapon that I chose to utilize the most. Did you journal a lot? And did you find, for those that are out there and listening who possibly may want to become an author or even a ghostwriter, did you find that journaling was your gateway to actually penning some of your other books and some of your masters?
No, I didn't. God had to make things a little more obvious for me. I don't catch on that easily. Sometimes I always ask him, can you speak a little louder when you talk to me? Because, you know, sometimes I don't listen too well. So, no, I didn't journal. I still don't really journal. I have very rarely journaled. But what would happen is when I was in corporate America, I worked in almost every line of business at the bank. Now, I was there for 16 and a half years. Whenever somebody would say, she's a banker, I'd say, no, I'm not a banker. I just work at a bank, because I didn't feel like I was a banker. But I would always end up being the person who was the newsletter editor for the department or the training person, or if they had to write a manual for training or operations or disaster recovery or whatever it was, whenever anything needed to be written or presented, they always seemed to find me for it. So that's what kind of gave me my clue. Well, maybe this writing thing is what I'm supposed to be doing. But here's my real clue. I was so miserable. You know, I talked about that Sunday night depression. I was right there, and I had a coach. And my coach asked me, why do you think it is that you're so miserable? And I said, you know, I think God is allowing me to be so unhappy at work that I know I don't have a choice but to go somewhere else. So I started hearing this voice. I was at home, and I heard this voice say, start cleaning up your office. Get rid of your desktop computer. Get a laptop because you're going to be traveling. So I use my second bedroom as my office sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, you know, it sounds like a good idea. I went in. I got rid of my desktop computer. I bought a laptop, cleaned up my office, organized. I'm thinking, okay, I'm ready. I did what I was supposed to do. I'm sitting at my desk at work. I hear the same voice. Start cleaning up. Start throwing things away. You're not going to be here long.
Oh, my.
I thought, okay, I don't know where I'm going. I started getting excited, though. I told my coach, I told a few friends, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going somewhere. I'm out of here. And I said, I just know it has something to do with this writing. I had met Les Brown by that time, and I decided I wanted to do some speaker training with him and found out about National Speakers Association and Toastmasters and those groups. Right. And I knew that I wanted to do that. But I thought the writing was going to still be somewhere in corporate America or another department at the bank, but I started feeling this stronger and stronger. And it was November of 2004, I remember. And I just, for some reason, I just felt in my spirit, I said, I'm going to get a severance package. Now, I'd been through 3 mergers, and I was just pretty sick of being there. And I said, I know what's going to happen. I said, the holidays are coming. I said, I'm going to leave for Christmas vacation, and I'm not going to have to come back in January because I'm going to get a severance package. So I was all excited. So December came. I went on vacation. January came. I'm sitting back at my desk. I was just depressed. I said, God, why am I here? I'm not supposed to be here anymore. Why am I still here? But the feeling wouldn't go away. So I was sitting at my desk that first Friday in January, and I just said, I just feel like today is the day. And I went in the restroom. Now, nobody else in the department got a severance package or anything, but I just said, this is what's going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. I said, God, if today is the day, I'm ready. And I went in the restroom. I just prayed that prayer, and I came back out, and I sat at my desk. 30 minutes later, my boss came over, and she asked me to go in the office to talk to her and her boss. And they sat there, and they slid this piece of paper across the table to me, and it was a severance package. So they they're thinking they're breaking it to me gently.
Right.
And inside, I'm just jumping up and down and dancing because this is what I wanted. And so they said, oh, well, you have anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months to clean out your desk. We know you have a lot of stuff. I said, oh, no, I've already been cleaning up. I've been throwing away stuff. I'm ready to go. I just need 2 weeks. I want you all to have long enough to plan my party. And then they said, my boss said, you have so many skills and talents, and, you know, there's so much that you can do, and with the package you have plenty of time to figure out what you want to do. I said, oh, I already know what I want to do. I said, I've met Les Brown, and I'm going to be doing some speaker training. I have an idea for a book that I want to write. My boss got all excited. Les Brown, you got to be hungry. She said, we had him for our national sales conference.
Everybody
and I'm sitting there
one.
Thinking, you're essentially firing me and getting excited when I tell you what I'm about to do. But I just feel like that's what happens when you get into your purpose. Other people start getting excited about what you're doing. You know, my favorite book says that your gifts make room for you and bring you before great men. I've had the chance network with Les Brown, with Mark Victor Hansen, with Miles Monroe. Jim Stovall, who's a no relation, but he's a Christian movie maker and author, best-selling author, and they were all endorsers on my last book, Lightbulb Moments. They all gave me, Les did the forward, the rest of them all did endorsements. So, you know, when you get in your purpose,
once
you understand what it is and start working toward, God will start opening those doors.
Because that's how Daddy designed us.
He sure does.
That scripture, your gifts will make room for you and put you before
you. Absolutely.
Is I tell people, you know, sometimes it's kind of like a sink, a faucet at a sink. Sometimes you're the bowl underneath the faucet, and sometimes you're a little bit ahead of God. And so all that God has for you isn't able to come in and completely fill the bowl or the that's you.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we're a little behind him, and he's trying to get us to make that move or to shift our mind to be ready for that. And sometimes we're to the left or to the right. But when you are in the center of the will of God, underneath the faucet, he can pour you out a blessing that you really don't have enough room to receive. And that's when life gets what I call gooder, because God wants to set us up for success. But half the time, we're in our way. Like you said, you were sitting there on Sunday night depressed. You were sitting there miserable, going to a job, giving the best of you, working 8, 12 hours possibly a day, 40, 50 hours a week. When Daddy says, I've been allowing your gifts of writing to be honed. You're getting paid while you're still writing. And I'm probably how Empowered 2, the newsletter, also got birthed. But before we go to the newsletter, I want to go ahead and take a little pause for the cause, because you've given some great information, and I know people need to digest that. And I also want an opportunity to call in. If you're out there listening and you have a question or you'd like to make a comment, we invite you after the break to dial in. You can dial in now at 347-324-5246. That's 347-324-5246. After the break, we'll open up the lines, and if you're on the line, we'll go ahead and allow you to ask a question or make a comment. We're going to take a little pause for the cause. You're listening to OMG, the Omari Gale Radio Show. My special guest tonight is my twin, Talia Stovall. We'll be right back.
We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new uplifting and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn. Less stuff, more meaningful life. And an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels. And so much more. So get your subscription today at uptomemagazine.com. That's up, the number 2, magazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
Welcome back to OMG. I'm your host, Mara Gale. And, of course, my special guest today is none other than Talia Stovall. And when we left off, we were actually kind of talking about her writing ability, of course, and she's got a newsletter out, which we're going to get to. But I want to touch on Lightbulb Moments. I want to Lightbulb Moments so that we can kind of open that up to allow those aha or those lightbulb moments to go on for some of our listeners. And I know you've got nuggets to share. Tools. So let's just open up with that and start that conversation, and maybe by then we'll have some people that may have some questions or comments for you.
Okay. Well, Lightbulb Moments is my second book. I self-published my first book, Crossing the Threshold, as you know, Opening Your Door to Successful Relationships. But I had already started Lightbulb Moments before I started Crossing the Threshold. I just never finished. I kind of put it aside. And then as I wrote my newsletter, Empowered 2 newsletter, I was still incorporating those light bulb moments, those little those little nuggets that God drops on you when you're doing some just ordinary mundane thing in life, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I get it now. That's what I was supposed to learn from that. You know, and that it could be when I'm walking on the lake, on the treadmill, and those, they were just popping in my mind. I find if I didn't write them down, I'd forget them. I'd think, oh, that's really great. I'm not going to forget that. But if I didn't write it down, I would forget it. So I just start writing them down. I put them in my newsletter, and people would email me back, and they'd say, wow, you know, I really appreciate that article. That really resonated with me. You know, sometimes I would get discouraged myself, and I just, you know, feel like maybe I'm not making a difference. But just those times when I'd feel like that, somebody would email me. Or once I ran into a woman at Costco. She was in there selling coats, and she said, aren't you Talia Stovall? And I said, yeah. And I had been praying that day. I said, God, I just don't feel like I'm, you know, in my purpose. I'm making an impact. And she said, I haven't gotten a newsletter from you in a while. And I said, I haven't written one in a while. She said, well, write a newsletter. We need to hear what you have to say. You know, it's inspiring. So I was just encouraged. So those newsletter articles, what I started, and then I just couldn't seem to motivate myself to finish that book. So I'm like that kid at the candy store, though. I have to draw this. And I believe, like, you know how when you get to the candy, to the checkout counter, and the kid sees the little candy bar there, and they say, Mommy, can I have this? And and sometimes Mommy says yes. So I kind of take that attitude with God. Sometimes it's like, Daddy, can I have this? And I believe it's important. And I talked about first understanding your passion. I think the next you have to also have a vision for what you want in your life. Everything starts with a vision. Everything was first created with a vision from the phone we're talking on. It was first a vision in somebody's mind before it was created. So I would put those visions sometimes before God. I have some God-sized visions. I said, God, I want to teach on the college level. That was something I always wanted since I graduated from undergrad. I've taught at 4 different schools. I'm still teaching at Columbia College. And I didn't have to really look for any of those opportunities. They just all dropped in my lap. Yeah. I said, I want a radio show. God, I wrote down, these are the things, you know, Rebecca, too. Write the vision, make it plain. I wrote down, these are the people that I want to have on my radio show. These are the topics I want to talk about. I got a call from the general manager of a radio show. He said, I don't know how I got on your newsletter list, but I really like what you have to say, and I want to know if you'd like to have a radio show on my station. I said, sure. And I was all ready for it. The other thing I asked God for was a book deal. As I mentioned, I had self-published the first book, and I said, God, I want a book deal this time. I said, but I don't want to get an agent. I don't want to have to shop it around. I said, I just want a deal. Can I just have a deal? So a friend of mine, Kiela, called as a business partner. Actually, we do vision board workshops together. She told me about a competition that Hay House was having. I don't know if you're familiar with Hay House, Louise Hay.
Absolutely.
Yes, the number one seller. And this is so inspiring to me. I have a list of people who started late because I did too. Louise Hay published her first book at 60 years old, and her bestseller was her second book, How to Heal Your Life. Started Hay House Publishing. She just passed a couple weeks ago at 90, but it is now the number one seller of inspirational books worldwide. So they were having a nonfiction contest. So Kiela told me about it, and she told me about it in the spring. And, of course, I waited. And so the deadline was in September, so I was supposed to go to a conference. I said, let me not go to the conference. Let me stay here and finish this book. About a week and a half before the conference, the deadline, I said, let me finish writing this book. So I got the stuff that I had written, and this is a prophecy that I'd had. Your book is going to be from things that you wrote, things that new things, you put it all together, and that's what I did. The things from my newsletter, the things that I had already written, the new things I wrote, it all put together. I turned that manuscript in 3 hours before the midnight deadline, and out of 4,000 submissions, I ended up winning the contest and winning the book deal with Hay House.
Hallelujah, Talia. Obedience,
so, you
honey.
Know,
obedience.
We still have to do our part, but,
God will only meet us once we step
out.
You can't get a miracle standing still. Miracles manifest in motion. So you've got to be moving, doing, being, creating, becoming. And I believe we've got some callers. If you press 1 on the line, you'll be entered into the queue. So if you're on the line holding, press the number 1. You'll be entered into our virtual queue, and we'll get in some of those questions and comments because I know that some people would like to be able to call in for you or to actually comment on some of the things that you are speaking about. So if you're on the line and you want to join the conversation, press 1. Also, Talia, what you just laid down is for that was you said a very important ingredient. You had some God-sized dreams and visions. And and I want to share with our audience, sometimes we box God in. We're asking for this little bitty, tiny Mara-sized vision or Talia-sized vision. And God is like, sweetie, honey, sugar, I could do that all by myself overnight without you blinking, but I got more for you. And so sometimes we have to open up the lens of our mind and allow Daddy to enlarge our territory and blow our mind with stuff. And I'm not meaning, oh, I want a Maserati, a mansion, and $1 million. I'm talking about allowing your gifts to make room for you, according to Proverbs 18:16. But more importantly, Talia said she wrote the vision playing upon the table. That's Habakkuk 2:2. It says, write the vision playing upon the table that he that read will run, but you must first have a burden for the vision. So you wanted to do more with what you were entrusted with. You were being a good steward by saying, Lord, I was my company let me loose, and I thank you for the provision so that in the end, finances will be taken care of. And then you said, I want a book deal. I don't want to have to hustle for it. I want a book deal. And look at who you got with. Hallelujah.
No. But I still am promised a bestseller. I don't know if it's still going to be that one or if it's going to be the next one. Because as I told you, I have that next one that's coming, and I got to start working on that because it can't be a bestseller if I don't write it. So I got to get busy on it.
Can you say amen? Hey. Okay. So I got a question for you. All right. So you're this author. You're a professor and you or teacher, instructor at different colleges, on off, or a core trainer, and of course an author with audio product as well. What would you say was one of the most challenging mountains that you had to have faith the size of a mustard seed, perhaps, or even bigger, to get it to move out of its way? What was your, you know, everybody has a setback moment or a challenge or an issue or a struggle with something that we actually deal with either on a day-to-day basis, and sometimes we're just as successful as we are failure, and that one thing keeps rearing its ugly. What would you say that thing was?
Oh, I have to say that thing for me is we're going to talk a little bit later about wiring and how everybody is uniquely wired. I have that teacher encourager gift, which also, and the giftings come from Romans 12. It talks about all the spiritual gifts, and I have been tested, and I also played it out in my life. Teaching and encouraging is my gift, but with that comes the desire to learn. And so I'm always wanting to learn something. I'm the one who just got a PMP, Project Management Professional Certification, and a Lean Six Sigma Green Belt for quality assurance. I don't do those things, but I like to learn new stuff. I think that's why I like being a trainer, because I have to learn stuff in order to train people. I like being a teacher. I have to learn in order to train. So my problem is those of us who have that type of gifting, we're easily distracted because we see some shiny new thing, and we want to go after it, and then we learn it. I learned how to play the piano. Then I don't want to play the piano. I wanted to learn how to sail. Then I don't really want to sail. You know, we get distracted because we have so many different interests, and that's my thing. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do that. I think I can do it all, but what am I really supposed to be doing? A friend of mine's father was in, and this just popped into my head, in a nursing home, and I went to visit him, and I remember he was talking, and he was saying that there was a young lady there who – he was everybody's favorite patient, who wanted to write a book. And he said, I told her, I got a daughter who's an author, and I told her about you. And, you know, and then he started fussing at me. He said, you're teaching. He said, anybody can teach. He said, God told you to write. You need to be writing. You know, and it's like I do allow sometimes things to distract me. I think I didn't market light bulb moments like I needed to when it came out because I was on a contract doing training for somebody else. So for me, the biggest challenge has been getting past those distractions and staying focused. And I have tools that if I don't use certain tools, I will be all over the place.
But, you know, we call ourselves twin, and that I'm listening to you and I go, that was one of my biggest challenges. Because for me, it wasn't that I was so thirsty to learn all the different things as much as it was, I had all these different areas that I was gifted or talented in, and so I was pursuing all of them, and those things were working out some distractions weren't the ambition as much as it was the things on the peripheral. So I wrote a book called Beyond Blessed, and the caption is, distractions have a name and purpose has a face. And the reason for that is, once you can identify the distractions in your life, you can more fully and completely walk. And those distractions can be a man, it can be a woman, it can be what you were saying, like the shiny new thing or the new class or the new thing you can learn, and or it can even be family, it can be friends, it can be the lack of motivation in other people's lives. But once you identify them and you come to grips with them and say, okay, I'm distracted by that, so I need to put that someplace, I need to prioritize my life with that, knowing that that right there can totally take me off the path to purpose. And once you begin to do that and you actually clearly identify it and define it for what it is, you can more fully say, okay, I see what that is. Because every day I do what's called beat resistance. I beat resistance every day. And it's based on a book that I read, and it's a phenomenal book. And I'll share that resource. Actually, I'll share it online when we post this show. But It's Stephen Pressfield is the author of it, but what he talks about, you know, some people, I call it the enemy, sometimes people call it the devil. He just gave it a general name called resistance. Every time we're attempting to do something amazing, great, something that would either take us out of our comfort zone to empower others or would better our lives or the lives of those around us, there's a thing called resistance. Ever try to go back to school and get a degree, you have resistance. Mm-hmm. Ever try to lose weight and for some reason you just can't get your butt downstairs to the gym, that's called every time you think about writing that book or producing that film, something comes up and you end up, you know, succumbing to whatever that distraction is. But if you set your heart and your mind on beating resistance every single day in some way, no matter how big the task is, no matter how many lines I write on a page, if my goal is to write a book, as long as I write something, be it one word, 20, be it good or bad, as long as I put my pen to the paper, I beat resistance. And the same for the gym. If I go downstairs for 5 minutes, at least I beat resistance for those 5 minutes. So those are other tools that, for those that are listening in, you can put in your toolbox so that you aren't distracted, so that you can identify it, so that you can truly walk in purpose. Because God has more for you when you're doing the thing that you're supposed to do. It's kind of like a, wouldn't you say, Talia, it's kind of like a puzzle piece. When you're doing what you're supposed to do, it's like all the other pieces, all the other lessons, all the other experiences and jobs all seem to kind of fit in place. And you go, oh, I learned that from there, and I learned this from
absolutely.
That. You know?
Absolutely.
It kind of works that way, huh?
It really does. And Kiela and I developed in our program, in our 7 Secrets to Ignite Your Dreams program, a tool, and I use it also in my coaching. I have a 5 weeks to personal breakthrough coaching where I take people from creating their vision based on their values, not on the demands or desires of other people, but all the way through creating your vision, setting the goals, breaking the goals down into tasks. We created something we call daily disciplines. And I found that if I use that, that keeps me so focused. What we do is we take the goals, we break them down into small chunks, manageable. Mm-hmm. We take those chunks, you actually put them on the calendar. What are you going to do each day to get toward that chunk of that goal, that task? And then we have one at the top we call the 10 things you do before 10. So 10 before 10 and before 10 a.m. And then the rest of it is the stuff you have to do the rest of the day. I found that sometimes you look at it, you think, I can't get all this done. But when you organize it and you have it there visible, and I love checking out stuff. It makes me feel good when I'm able to put a check or a line through something. Sometimes I write something down just so I can check it out.
I'll finish something and go, ooh, that wasn't on the list. I'll add it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And you know what? It's interesting because our pastor is actually ministering on, he was ministering, I think it was the last couple of series. The last series was about our visions and our dreams, about write it down. He talked about Habakkuk. He said, run with the vision. Because once you see something in front of you, it's really hard to ignore it.
Right.
It's really hard to ignore something that you put ink and paper or that you punched into your smartphone, which seems to be smarter than most of us a lot. But if I put it in my phone and I set myself a reminder, I'm going to get that done.
Exactly.
Or I'm going to try my, because what we give our attention to grows, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm so excited about the last couple series that he's been preaching to, because there was an analogy he gave on Sunday, and I'm like, that's what I always use. There's, you know, scriptures. I'm like, yeah, that's what I always. I mean, it's just like so much reinforcement that's coming from so many different directions from him, from other ministers I've heard. You know, if I turn the TV on, if I turn the radio on, it's like I'm hearing that same message. So I feel like God has given me the same directions from. And he's speaking up. Like I said, he's got to speak up for me.
Well,
let me know.
Rhema
what
word.
Is it
that's
I'm supposed
when you
to be doing?
Know. That's when you know you're in the right place and that you're on the right station. Because sometimes people go through life and they don't get that signal, that radio signal that's saying go left, go right, do this right now, or go to the bathroom and pray and then come back out because you're going to get this severance package. Or, you know, you can actually be an author that's going to, you won't have to be self-published this next time. You know, that's Daddy. He's constantly speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of the time, we're too busy using the thing that we have one of instead of the things that we have two of. We have one mouth and two ears for and I like to, now I'm on a radio show, so y'all forgive me. I have to talk because otherwise it'll be radio silence and you'll tune out. But I need you to hear me when I say this. We have two ears for a reason. The better to hear God, the better to pay attention to the things and those around us that may perhaps need our help or may perhaps need something that we can offer. So I'm very, very encouraged and excited about this conversation. And Talia, I do not want it to end. So we're going to take a really, really, really short break. And we'll come back and we'll do our next half. If you're listening and you'd like to join in on the conversation, and I know sometimes it's intimidating getting on air and you're thinking, oh, Talia and Mara are just talking and take a breath, but we're twins. We kind of talk without taking a breath. Got wired that way.
Oh my gosh,
when we talk
people
back,
tell
Talia
me that.
Talia's going to talk about wiring, but she and I, we could speak without a pause or punctuation because that's the way we're wired. But I want to encourage you to call in at 347-324-5246. That's 347-324-5246. You may not have a question, but you may just want to, you know, make a comment or share an observation. If that's you, we want you to call in, press 1. And I also, right before we go to break, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Up to Me Radio. We also have a magazine, Up to Me Radio, Up to Me Magazine, and our shows are available via podcast. That's at iTunes, Stitcher app, as well as the Google Play app. All you have to do is search Up to Me Radio and then look for OMG. And we have several other shows that are available. We'd love for you to become a longtime listener and tune into our podcast. And most of those apps will give you reminders so you don't even have to think about it. The guesswork is taken out. Join us. Again, it's Omar Gale's show. And my special guest tonight is Talia Stovall. We'll be right back after this brief announcement.
Every hiring manager knows that a company is only as good as the people it's made from. So where do you find the best people? That may surprise you.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
This is talent worth knowing about.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Welcome back to OMG, the Omar Gale Radio Show. I'm your host, Mara Gale, and my special guest tonight is Talia G. Stovall. And so, Talia, let's, for these next couple of minutes, let's taste and feast on wiring. Let's talk about wiring, because sometimes, you know, it's the way we think about things. Some of the things when we were a child, we were told you won't amount to anything. We were told you were broke or you were poor. You were robbing Peter to pay Paul in order to get some money from Mark. I mean, and when you grow up like that, your mentality is fixed on, I don't have enough, won't get enough, and there's not enough out there, not enough men, not enough money, not enough time. I'll never amount to anything. So let's go ahead and dispel and diffuse that bomb right now. Talk to the people about wiring.
Wow. Okay, so you know what? You said a couple of things there that just really stood out to me. So I'm going to do two things. Once, I want to tell a little anecdote as an example, but then I want to talk about how we're really wired. See, I heard somebody tell a story years ago about a man that was fishing by side of a river, and he saw this older gentleman a little bit further down the river. He was fishing too, and he noticed that this man was just catching so many fish. And he just started watching him, but he noticed something strange, that when the man caught a fish, he would hold it up against his stick. And if the fish was bigger than the stick, he'd throw it back. If the fish was smaller than the stick, he'd put it in his basket and keep it. So after a while, he said, this is a really strange behavior. He went over to the man. He said, why is it that, you know, you're throwing away the fish that are bigger and you're putting the smaller ones in your basket? And the man said, well, I have this frying pan at home. And he said, the frying pan is the same size as the stick. So I know if I catch a fish that's bigger than the stick, it won't fit in my frying pan. So I let those go, and I put the smaller ones in because I know they'll fit. See, the man had constraints. He was constrained by his current circumstances. He was constrained by those voices that say, you can't do this. You don't have enough money. You're too old. Moses was 80 when God called him out of the wilderness to lead the people out of Israel. You're never too old. Grandma Moses, the painter, picked up the paintbrush for the first time when she was 76. You're never too old. You're never too whatever you are, whether you're African American, you're never too black, you're never too young, you're never too much of a female, whatever it is they're telling you that you can't do.
Yeah.
You have to take those constraints off. So sometimes instead of looking at our current circumstances, we just got to get a bigger frying pan. We need to look at how we're really wired. Now, I took this test years ago when I was in corporate America. You know how you take the personality profiles and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Look at it. Oh, that's interesting. Put it away. Put it in a drawer. Meanwhile, went through all my rest of my corporate America career, left, went out on my own, started teaching, started doing my own thing, started learning. I met a friend when I was in a coaching group, and we just really hit it off, got to be good friends from the group. She introduced me to a life purpose coaching, and that's why I became a life purpose coach, tool called The Call. It's a faith-based tool, and it has 27 constructs. It uses 7 motivational gifts, 6 occupational interests, 5 cognitive measures of a cognitive ability, and 9 personality and behavior traits. It measures all of those with like 300-some questions, and it tells you exactly how you're wired. So she trained me to, first I took the test myself, and then, I shouldn't say test, but, profile. And then she trained me to administer it so that I could give it to others, and it's so accurate. And guess what it told me? It told me the same thing that was on the test that I had taken probably 10 years before, because how we're wired is how we're wired, and it doesn't change. So the gift that you were given, and we all have at least one or two of those motivational gifts, the prophet gift, the server, the teacher, the encourager, the contributor, the leader, the gift of mercy. So everybody has some of those gifts, but we don't always recognize them in ourselves.
Yeah.
And then we have our occupational. So the gifts is kind of how we move. That's what our feet kind of. Then we have our occupational interests. Those are the heart. So are we enterprising? Are we somebody that likes to promote, to sell, to present? Are we kind of more of a financial or administrative person? Do we like serving people? Are we more technical? Are we more mechanical? Are we more creative? We have to look at all of those things. Then it measures our thinking style. So that's our head. So what is our learning style? What are our verbal skills, our numerical skills? Measures all of that. Then it talks about those personality and behavior traits. So those are like the hands. Talks about energy level. Now, you can probably tell my energy level's pretty high. I had 3 hours of sleep last night. So I think when I'm on adrenaline, it's even higher. So assertiveness, your sociability. Are you an introvert? Are you an extrovert? Believe it or not, I used to be an introvert. And then I started moving until I got to be on the line, and I can kind of flip back and forth. Manageability, do you like a job where it's structured and you are managed, or do you like something that's a little more fluid? For me, I have to have a job. I'm not a sit-behind-a-desk person. I can't have something where I'm just stuck. I'll lose my mind. I have to be up. Teaching, training allows me to be up, moving around, meeting new people. It measures attitude. Are you a trusting person? Are you a skeptical person? Decisiveness, how do you make those decisions? Quickly, do you have to evaluate everything? Are you accommodating? You the person who seeks harmony, or are you that person that's got to, have it your way? Independence.
Right.
Your objective judgment. It measures all of these things, and it puts it together, and then it tells you these are the jobs that you are most suited for. So what did it tell me? It told me that I would be good at speaking and writing and teaching and religious activities, and it told me exactly. I had already figured it out the hard way and was doing it by then.
Okay.
But then when I look at it And then I went and looked at the one that I had taken 10 years before. I thought, well, duh, you know, if you,
right.
Those kind of tools can really help us to understand who we are, how we're wired, and what we should really be doing with our lives. So it is even a great tool if you have relationships, it does, you know, romantic relationships, parent-child. You can actually do both people, and you can say, okay, this is where you guys are going to work well together, and this is where you guys might have a little bit of a struggle. So,
yeah.
You know, if someone is a profit gift, you know, what kind of person, he might need a person who has the kind of mercy gift. So certain gifts kind of balance each other out, and certain
yeah.
gifts we have to understand. Certain thinking styles, I always use my brother and sister-in-law as an example. Everybody has the same aptitude to think and reason and figure things out, but some people, we just do it differently. So my brother
right.
is kind of like me. You get the information, okay, I got it, I'm ready to go. And then my sister-in-law is poring over it because she wants to get a deeper understanding. Well, both have their uses, and both
yeah.
need to understand and appreciate the other. Because that person who gets the information like, yep, I got it, they think they got it because they got a high level and they're ready to run, but they probably missed something. And that
yeah.
person who's taking their time, they're thinking, well, I don't catch on so quick, but guess what? You got a deeper understanding when you did get it. So we have to learn to appreciate our gifts and the gifts of other people so that we can get along with and work with and marry and all those things with
yeah.
other people.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with that, and I wish more people would take some of those assessment tests a little bit more seriously. Yes,
mm-hmm.
it's great to find out and figure it out and to do it the hard way because, you know, that's trial and error. And sometimes it's in our trial or our error that we actually learn what we don't like, what we
right.
aren't very good at, what we, I mean, I remember the one time, you know, I've been independently employed since 1990.
Wow.
And I took one job in between 1990 and now, what's this, 2017. And the job that I took, it's so interesting. I worked for Kaiser Permanente. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to work at Kaiser Permanente, but it was right after the mortgage crisis and entertainment industry was shifting to more reality-based TV. And although I had, prior to working at Kaiser Permanente, I had 6 streams of income from product to speaking to ministry
mm-hmm.
to acting to voiceover to being a, I wasn't a corporate trainer. I was a corporate spokesperson. So I flew around the country. With computer trade shows, all types of trade shows for Motorola, Computer Associates, you name it, I did it. But I took this job at Kaiser Permanente, and I really didn't want to be there. And within 2 months of completing the training, I got tapped for a position that didn't exist called a compassion coach.
Wow.
Now, they had never had a care compassion coach prior to me being there, but what they recognized on the phone when I was dealing with members is what they called them instead of customers, they recognized
mm-hmm.
I had what we call encouraging. You and I both have that. We're Barnabas.
Mm-hmm.
We're Barnabas to most people. I had an encouraging spirit, so when people would call in, instead of just doing the routine of what's your medical record number and transfer them to the doctor, I would say, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Let me get you an appointment right away. Or I'd say,
yeah.
oh, you must be exhausted having been up all night. Let me see if I can get somebody to see you right away. Just those little words caused
mm-hmm.
the members to want to speak to my supervisor. Fast forward, they started listening to the calls and trying to figure out how I had so many members call in to give positive feedback, which they would give this award. I can't remember what it's called, but it was some kind of certificate. But I say all of that to say my gifts were making room for me, even though I wasn't in a place I wanted to be, because Daddy knew he was trying to get the money to me so that I could stay afloat, do whatever I needed to do. I only stayed in that job for 9 months. And within
mm-hmm.
those 9 months, not only did I get tapped as the compassion or the care coach, but I also got promoted to quality control, which was the step down from a supervisor. And I was there for 9 months. God can take your little when you're
yeah.
willing and open and multiply it. And,
sure
and that story that you gave about the man with the fish reminds me of the story about the ham. I know you've heard the story
yes.
about the ham. And
yes.
they keep saying, well, why are you cut the ham? Well, my mama cut the ham. And you called the mom, and the mom said, because we didn't have a pot big enough to hold the whole ham, so we cut the ham in half. That is Talia and Mara trying to share with you, our listeners, sometimes you limit yourself
mm-hmm.
by your circumstances. You limit yourself by what you didn't see your mama do or your brother do or your friends do. But we're here to share with you tonight that take the blinders, take the limits off of God, take the limits off of yourself, your ideas, and your dreams, and allow yourself to soar. Imagine, dream, envision the biggest, most magnanimous concept that you can actually accomplish, and then start taking daily steps. Don't do it like it's a lottery and you play a ticket and you're waiting to win. Walk it out. Work it out. Let it manifest by actually taking daily steps towards that mark, towards that goal. So, Talia, we got a few minutes left, and I'd love to find out, you know, I know you had a couple of other books. I want to kind of touch on crossing the threshold, opening your door to successful relationships. Now, of course, everybody sees crossing the threshold and think, ooh, she's talking about getting married. And you're like, no, sweetheart, it's something bigger than getting married. Opening the door to successful relationships, not just husband and wife relationships, but I'm sure you're talking about business and personal relationships, family relationships. So can you share a little bit about that while we've got a few more minutes? And again, if anybody's out there and want to call in, I just want to remind our callers not only to dial the number 347-324-5246, but remember to press 1 and we'll enter you into a queue. Go ahead, Talia.
Well, ironically enough, the book is about romantic relationships, and I'll tell you how it came about. But first, even though the book was about romantic relationships, remember that company that I told you I got the severance package, they downsized, they kicked me out of corporate America, as a friend of mine says? They were my very first client when I started speaking. They paid me to go down to Tampa to talk to their Women's Affinity Network, and they told me that we heard you have this workshop on your book called Crossing the Threshold. I said, yeah, but that book's about romantic relationships. I said, I don't think you want that. They said, no, that's what we want. We heard it was a good workshop, and we want that. And I said, but okay. I said, well, you know what? The concepts fit any kind of relationship. Whatever you are in your romantic relationship, you're that same person at work. You're that same person in your family. So you take it everywhere. So that was my first client when I did started my speaking. So anyway, the book Crossing the Threshold came out of a conversation that I had with a good friend of mine. We were kind of instant friends, like you and I. I met her at National Baptist Convention. I sneezed, she gave me a tissue, and we've been friends for 30 years. People would ask us that week, like, how long have you all known each other? And they thought we were joking when we would say, we just met this week. And they're like, yeah, right? No, we were instant friends and still are. She's a pastor now. Proud of her. Valencia. Mm. So anyway, we're on the phone one night, and we were talking about relationships. This is back, you know, that book came out in 2006, but this is back in 2005. And we just somehow got on the mindsets that women sometimes have in relationships. And we said, sometimes there's a woman that doesn't value herself enough to think that she's worthy of a relationship, so she does all these things because she's trying to get this man to like her. And so we called her the doormat. And I said, yeah, but you know, on the other end of the spectrum, there's a woman who doesn't think she has to do anything because it's all about her. He should just be happy to have her. And so we called her the door prize. And I said, yeah, but there's a woman in the middle who's focused, who's God-focused. She gives, but not because she's trying to buy someone's affection, but that's because who she is. And so she's the Proverbs 31 woman. So we start talking about her attributes, and we decided that she was the doorbell because she's the belle of the ball. So at that point, I thought, I think this is a book. So I went through the dictionary, and I started coming up with all the other door personalities that went into the book. I started interviewing men and women. I would talk to the women or men, too, about times that they might have been the doormat or the door prize. For those who were married men, I asked them, so what was it that made your wife the doorbell? Why did you decide that she was the one? So I interviewed them about all of that kind of stuff, and that's how the book came together. So it talks about, the main premise is, instead of looking for things in other people, develop the right things in yourself. So it talks about deer hunting, how D-E-A-R, everybody's out looking for that connection. It talks about watching out for the enemy, because as Pogo Possum said in The Art of War, the enemy is sometimes us. Talks about the Cinderella syndrome. We're waiting to be rescued. We got to rescue ourselves. Don't be a bag lady. Let go of that baggage from your past. Not settling for Mr. In the Meantime. Talks about
get up out my book. I'm listening to you. I had a doe number one, doe number two, doe number three, but it was D-O-E. Doe number one, doe number two, doe number three.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And literally, the Mr. In the Meantime, Mr. Right Now, all of those.
Yeah.
This is you are really weirding me out. Just so you all know, those that are tuned in and eavesdropping on our
We gotta do a DNA test. Were we separated at birth? No.
Gosh, my twin is my twin. But go ahead, finish your.
Talks about becoming what you're seeking. So we're, you know, after we get rid of the negative stuff, we start building out the positive. Instead of having that long list of all the stuff you need to have, develop those right qualities in yourself so that you can draw the right people into your life. And then how to recognize the difference between love and infatuation. They have a lot in common. They may look alike, but, you know, a feeling versus a commitment. And talks about the difference. There's a chart, a three-page chart, talks about the difference between infatuation and love. Go into some of those. I won't go into them. They can get the book if they want to see this chart. It talks about what it means to be a helpmeet, because a lot of people don't understand that. It's not a helpmate, as people call it. It's a helpmeet, and the word meet just means fit, suitable. You're the person that's suitable for the other person. So you're becoming, God gives you to the person that you are the most suitable for. So just understanding that. So that's what crossing the threshold is all about. I don't know if we talked about light bulb moments, really.
We talked about how you got the deal. I want to know about light bulb. Okay, so I tell you what, we're going to have to do a part two. So just briefly, do a teeny weeny weeny taste of light bulb.
Okay, well, as I said, light bulb moments are those kind of everyday lessons that, you know, okay, here's one. I'll give you an example of one. People ask me, what's an example? There's one called Let the Seasonings Come Together. I was having breakfast with a friend, and she's telling me, we're talking about eating while we're eating. So she's telling me about this soup that she made for her family and how it took her 4 days to make this soup. It never taken her so long to make soup. So she, you know, told me each day what she added to the soup. She tasted it, wasn't quite right. I'm kind of fast-forwarding. The next day she'd taste it, she'd add something else, wasn't quite right. By the fourth day, her family's like, when are we going to get this soup? But they tasted it and said it was the best soup they ever had. Sometimes in life we want something right away, and we don't want to wait for the seasonings to come together. We don't want to wait until God has grown us, grown that other person, changed the situation to where it's right, but we want to force our way into, you know, that microwave society that we live in. We want it right now, but sometimes we have to be patient, let the seasonings come together so that we get what God really has for us. So that's just an example of a quick one, but there are just all kinds of life lessons about perseverance, about appreciating what you have, about focus, understanding your why, use it or lose it. There's just all kinds of lessons in there. So,
that's so good.
So that's 75, so cool. There's actually 76.
70. Now it's 76. 76.
It's called 75 because that's a nice number, but I sneaked another one in because I met this amazing woman, this little old lady on a plane, and I think she was 90, and this was the most energetic, childlike, when it comes to just appreciating and having this childlike wonder of life. I fell in love with this lady. I was on this little bitty plane coming from some hick town somewhere where I was traveling for work. I can't even remember where it was, but she was so awesome that I just had to add her to the end of the book, so I just made it an epilogue.
Well, there you have it, and what that is called is you get a bonus. So you have 75 lessons for everyday living, and that particular book has 76 lessons because you're so generous. You've given them a bonus. Now, Talia, we're at the end of our show. I need you to real quick, like 15 seconds, just tell people where they can reach you, and then I'll close out the show, and we'll have to have you back for a part two.
Okay. Well, I think my name was misspelled on the thing, but Talia Stovall. It was on Facebook. It's correct. My website is old, but it's there. I'm going to work on it. So you can reach me there. The books, Lightbulb Moments, Crossing the Threshold, and even 150 Questions You Should Ask Before You Say I Do. You can get those online. 7 Secrets to Ignite Your Dream. Pump It Up stands for Pursue Your Passion, Utilize Your Uniqueness, Make a Plan, and Persevere with Positivity. I'm on all social media under my name. So Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, all of them are just my name. I'm kind of, like I said, not creative when it comes to that. So they can find me.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, we've enjoyed you as my special guest. Of course, I'm sure people were taking copious notes. So thank you so much for being a part of the show. I'm the host, Mara Gale. You can find me on all social media at Mara Gale. Also at MaraGale.com. That's my website. And of course, I've got a newly released film called STEM, The Movement, which I co-wrote, co-produce, co-star in. We've just been selected for two film festivals, one in New York called October Film Festival, the first weekend in November, and then one called Churches Making Movies, the second weekend of October. You can purchase the film at stemthemovement.org. That's STEM.org. About technology. We created a concept years ago, and that was before the phrase science, technology, engineering, and math. I've enjoyed you tuning in today. I want you to tune into our podcast if you're tuning in late or if you'd like to hear some of our earlier broadcasts. We thank you so much. You can roll it on home, tune in, lean in, and listen up to OMG every single Thursday. God bless you. God keep you is my wish.
Everyone likes to be heard and then listened to. So we want you to set your dial to OMG on Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. OMG.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.